This year is dedicated to the memory of Gershon Ben Chaim HaKohen, George Kaplan Olivar Shalom. That's his husband, who's a good friend, who's a good lady. He's just plain a good lady. And the study, and I think what we may be studying, will truly be an Ilui L'Nishmato. That is, be a schus for his neshama. I approach this year with a great deal of fear and trepidation. I just want to make sure that whatever I say is going to be balanced. If you've looked at the sources, you may think that it's absolutely impossible even for me to cover all of those sources in one year. And that's true. That's true. It may very well be that this year is going to be the first in a series. But I want to discuss an area of halacha that is extremely important and significant. And I believe that we're going to have to put our heads together to figure out why there is a hesitation or a reluctance to indeed fulfill these halachot. Now that I have you significantly in suspense, so I'll begin by telling you precisely what we're going to talk about, and I say, nothing in this shiur is going to be meant as psak halacha. I want my students to be tuned in to the issues so they should be able to understand and discuss intelligently what are unusual and exceptional issues that maybe should face the religious community even more than it does, and for that matter, even our government, and we're not talking politics. We're not talking politics. For 2,000 years, men would finish a speech, man or woman would finish a speech, we should be zeicher b'meheir v'yameinu. So of course, to be as HaMashiach and binyan bet hamikdash. Kosovitsky. I can do it, my voice is better. Shibonekos Hamigdash. Binyan Beit Hamigdash. It's something that we've looked forward to, we have prayed. In the Shmona Esrei of Musaf, Ahan Rosh Chodesh, An Yantif, Mepnei Chato'enu, because of our sins, Golinu Yartzenu, we were exiled from our land, V'nitrachaknu, and we have been distanced, make our admotenu from upon our land. And we feel terrible. We talk about the fact that there are the sacrifices to be brought. Vein onu yecholim lalot ulishtachavot. We can't go up and bow down before God on the Temple Mount. But we can. But we can. What is the halacha about going up to the Temple Mount? What's the halacha? Mutter, osur, is it permitted for some, prohibited for others? Are there conditions? What does it all depend on? If we will finally arrive at a conclusion that one is permitted to go up to the Temple Mount, then the question, of course, is going to be, why are we reluctant? Even the chief rabbinate that began to deal with it in 1967, immediately after the Six-Day War, proclaimed the prohibition on going up to the Temple Mount. What it really means is the following, and I think it was Moshe Dayan that gave them back the keys. It was ours, and we gave it away. didn't not only Shema sing them before the Six-Day War, Ve'en Pokeid et Har HaBayit? Nobody goes to Har HaBayit. Here it is, we've been crying our eyes out, and we say in davening, Ein Ol Yecholim La'alot U'Lishma, we can't go up. But what happens if we can go up? What are we going to do
when we get there
with what we say in Shmoneh Esrei? What are we going to do with it? What are we going to do with the Musaf of Shabbos? What are we going to do with the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh and the Yom Tovim? And by the way, I'm not going to deal with that at all. I'm not going to deal with that at all. But the first thing, in order to be conversant with it, what we have to know is what are the halachic parameters of it. And here it is. We're going to start now, Parshas Tzure, Kitzaveh, Kitisa, Vayakel, Pekudei, all of Sefer Vayikra, Mikdash, Mishkan, all of this, so many Parshiyot to deal with it. Now let's take a look in the year Tav Shin Samach Dalad. May a Jew go up to the Temple Mount or may he not? What are the issues? By the way, from the halachic point of view, it has been dealt with extensively. Not only that, over 100 years ago, there was, if it had been dealt with a number of times, the question even of bringing korbanot, bringing sacrifices, to Zahazah. That we may say for some later year, just to give you the various opinions, the history of it all. There's also an issue, of course, of the archaeology of the Temple Mount, the topography of the Temple Mount. We have to know that there are different parts to the Temple Mount. But we're going to start, and we're going to go about it in what I consider to be a systematic way. The first question that we have to deal with is... First question we have to deal with is, one thing is for certain, there will be a sign going up to the Temple Mount. Please deposit your cell phones before you go up. The only phone calls that are permitted are direct heavenward. Nothing else. Let me tell you, if there's anything that has we have things to upset us here every day. Not only every day, but a few times each day. One that upset me about 7 or 8 weeks ago, when I went up for the first time to the Temple Mount, an Israeli policeman stands there, watches, and he says, "Al titpaleh, don't pray." Everybody on the face of this earth can pray on the Temple Mount except Jews. Do you understand? Do you understand the shame? We proclaimed on the 28th day of the year in 1967, the Temple Mount is in our hands. The Temple Mount is in our hands, that a Jew can't daven on the Temple Mount. And the person who took me up to the mountain said that, you know, we will make believe that we're in conversation, and as we're talking to each other, we're going to say to him, can you imagine a bazillion, a shank? By the way, the Temple Mount is clearly the best known act of absolute robbery in the whole world. There is nothing worse than the Temple Mount. Clear that it belonged to us. Clear that it was ours. The Muslims didn't even exist on the face of this earth until the 6th, 7th century. It's unbelievable. It was ours for 2,500, 3,000 years. They're the Johnny come latelys. And they're the Balabatim. And not only they're the Balabatim, we let them be the Balabatim. We let them be the double bottom. Why is it so? I mean, obviously, there's got to be some kind of reason behind it. We're going to investigate it. We're going to investigate it. I'm going to try very much not to let my own feelings show through, but you know, of course, that I'm going to fail miserably. But certainly that this is an act of absolute robbery, thievery, by the light of day. And a Jew can't go up and daven on the Temple Mount. Unbelievable. All right. First shaila that's going to be dealt with is going to be, is their sanctity, is the Temple Mount holy? And if the Temple Mount is holy, halachically, from the point of view of halacha, what kind of restrictions exist as a result of the holiness of the Temple Mount? The next stage, of course, is going to be the question, even if there are restrictions, do the restrictions apply to the whole area on the Temple Mount, or are there different areas on the Temple Mount? One thing is quite clear that everybody admits. The Temple itself took up only one part of the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is much larger, maybe more than twice or three times larger than the area that was the Beit HaMikdash itself. I'm not going to start with page one. I'm going to start with page three. And on page three, I have taken from the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam, the Book of Mitzvot, Mitzvot, and I don't have all of them. We'll get to more of that. The Mitzvot that are involved in the Temple Mount. And I'll tell you, I did a Sunday morning in the shul near where I dive, and I look at my svarim, the shul svarim, and I noticed a sefer. It comes with English translation. I think it's put out by Feldheim, the Sefer HaMitzvot HaKatzer, the short book of mitzvot that was written by the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim listed, I should have taken the numbers down, of all the positive commandments that we are obligated today and all of the negative commandments that we're obligated today. It was reprinted again some years ago here in Eretz Yisrael, and they added a whole bunch of mitzvahs that did not appear in the Chofetz Chaim's first listing, and they are all of the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz, the mitzvot that have to do with Eretz Yisrael. Truma and Meiser and Shmita and Meiser Sheni, Orlo, Klayar Kenem, all sorts of all of the agricultural mitzvahs that deal with Eretz Yisrael, which were not in the Chofetz Chaim's original listing, because, you know, I imagine he wrote it in Europe and didn't take into consideration the mitzvot that appear in that are to be observed in Eretz Yisrael. Negative and positive commandments, both. And I looked through the list, I went through it once, twice, three times, and I think I'm right. Even the people who added the new mitzvahs, those that apply to Eretz Yisrael, didn't add the mitzvah of those who are not permitted up to the Temple Mount, to keep away from the Temple Mount somebody who is halachically prohibited from going there. We're going to see that there are a number of mitzvot that deal with the Temple Mount, and they are real mitzvot today. Why wasn't it put in? I believe it wasn't put in simply because nobody thinks about it. In the minds of people, the Temple Mount is just plain verboten. It's out. You don't even think about it. So I want to make my little contribution to maybe changing this idea. Let's think about it, and let's talk about it, and let's find out why there's a reluctance to talk about it. But of course, in the event that we're going to arrive at a conclusion that there is absolutely no halachic way to go up to the mountain, then there's nothing to talk about. Then we know exactly. That's all. It's out of the question. It can't be done. By the way, even if it's out of the question, it would mean because one who is in a certain state of spiritual defilement is not permitted up to the mountain. That's a halacha in Torah. And that's a halacha in Torah that's real to us today. If such is ultimately the halacha. And even if we're going to arrive at a conclusion that we may go up to the mountain, it does not mean we may go up to all parts of the mountain, and it still means that there are those who may be, and that's most of us, who are in a state of spiritual defilement, cannot trespass over certain areas of the mountain. All right, that's enough. You know, that's enough. Let's go. HaMitzvah HaAyin Zayin. The Rambam, this is mitzvah number 77, and this is the negative commandments on page 3. Ha'azhorah, the warning, shehuzhar kol tomei lihikones l'chol hakodesh or kol mikdash asher kavod l'torah. This is the prohibition that anybody who is spiritually unclean is not permitted to go into the Bet HaMikdash. Asher kavod l'torah, and that's true for all generations. Kol ha'azhorah Mishar Niknor Ulvanim. There's some terms we have to learn. The Azara. The Azara is the courtyard of the Bet HaMikdash proper. We're going to differentiate between the Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, the whole mountain. Now we're talking specifically about that which is part of the Bet HaMikdash itself. The Azara is the courtyard of the Bet HaMikdash. From the Azara, you go into the Ezrat Yisrael. From there, you go to the Mizbeach. From the Mizbeach, we come to the building that houses the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Azara is the outer courtyard. And remember, it takes up one part of the Temple Mount. Kol Azara Mishar Niknor, from the gate of Nikanor Ulefanim. We may, in one of our subsequent shiurim, have a number of topographical maps, but that's not the... If you start having to look at those maps, you just throw up your hands and give up. But let's just get the halacha. Shehu Tchilas Ezrat Yisrael, Shar Niknor, the gate of Niknor, is the beginning of the courtyard of Yisrael. That's a name of an area in the Bet HaMikdash. V'hu Amron Yitalein, that is what God says in Torah. V'lo Yitamu Et Machaneihem. In Parashat Noso, it says that there are those who are Tomei, and they shall not defile the camp. Kloma Machane Shechina, the camp of the Divine Presence. We're going to see, and this is going to be important for all of the parashah we're going to learn now, there were three camps in the desert. There was Machane Shechina, the camp of the Divine Presence, which was the Mishkan that we are commanded to build in Parashat Truma. Around it was Machane Leviya, the camp of the Leviim. They were encamped around the Mishkan. That's a completely different area of halacha. Machane Leviya, one who is not tohor may go into Machane Leviya. The Rambam is even going to tell us you can have a dead body there. Moshe is the one who took the bones of Yosef out with him, and where did he keep it with him until they came to Eretz Yisrael? In Machane Leviya. Now part of the Temple Mount is the Machane Leviya. After the camp of the Leviim comes the camp of all of Israel, the four major groupings of Jews around the camp of the Leviim. Klomar Machane Shechina. Where can the one who is Tomei not go in to the camp of the Divine Presence? And the Gemara Masechta Makos said, "Habol Hamikdash Tamei, a person who comes into the Bet HaMikdash is Tamei. K'tiv Onesh u'K'tiv Hazhara, there is a punishment and there's warning. Onesh, the punishment is because it says, 'As Mikdash Hashem Timei, he has defiled the sanctuary of God, the Nichbata, There's a chiyuv and onish of karet, which means when we're talking about going up to the Temple Mount, we are talking about serious, serious halachas. But at the same time that there's serious halachas, we also have to know that there's another approach. Nobody hesitates, in other words, a posek does not hesitate to pass in a shayla in Hilchot Shabbat, where by Shabbat we're talking about what could be a capital punishment. A posek does not cringe before passing a shayla in Hilchot Nida, which is karet. So here we're also dealing with a shayla where there is an issur of karet. So you know what you do when you have a shayla? You deal with it. You deal with it. Is it asur? Is it mutter? That's all. But I just want you to know that we're not talking simply about something that's... you can. It's serious. And then as part of the warning is below your tamuhet machareh, they shall not defile the camp. In the Mechilta it says the following, Tzavik b'nei Yisrael v'yishav b'ramachna, this is in Parshat Maso, command the children of Israel, and they shall send from the camp. You have to send those who are impure, for example, the Mitzora, the person who has Tzadat, has to be sent out of the entire camp. It's a halacha to remove people who are defiled spiritually from within the camp until it passes. So there's the prohibition. That's the positive commandment. How do we know that there's a negative commandment? It says, they shall not defile the camp. He's going to bring all of the various psukim that deal with this. And what happens in the event that somebody does go into the temple and he reminds himself that he was impure? What kind of a sacrifice? What must he bring in order to atone for the sin? But it's clear this negative commandment is a person who is tamei is not permitted into the confines of the Beit HaMikdash. Now for us, this is a real problem. Assuming that you're permitted to make your way up to the Temple Mount, then it's very clear that there is no way to permit a Jew to set foot on any area of the Temple Mount that may have been the place upon which the Temple stood. And we have four different opinions on how to map the Temple Mount. There's a difference of a few meters between one and the other, but in general, even in specific terms, we can precisely map out what part of the mountain is absolutely prohibited to one, and we're all defiled because we've all come into contact with a dead body, and anybody who's tummy mate, we don't have the ash of the red heifer anymore, so we're not in a position to go through the process of purification that will permit us to enter the temple courtyard or the temple itself. So that's a no-no. That's out of the question. Now, of course, there may be people who say, listen, if you don't go up to the mountains, you're not going to make the possible mistake of treading and trespassing where you should not. Right, that's one approach to our offer. The other approach is, what happens if it's important to go up to the Temple Mount? What happens if it's important to establish that, yes, this is ours, this was ours, this will be ours, and certainly at least that we have the right to pray here just like anybody else? So then we find a way to make sure the halacha, you can go up to the mountain, and then when you're up on the mountain, you watch. I mean, we are capable of doing such things. We are capable of not going where we shouldn't go. I mean, I think we do that all the time. You don't go walking onto the LIE. I was going to say during rush hour. During rush hour, you can easily cross the LIE.
It's not moving.
But if it's not rush hour, you don't walk onto the LIE. Finish. You don't go onto the LIE. The Long Island Expressway. people from Atlanta don't have to know anything about the LIS. But people of the world, you understand, do know about it. I see the English over here also have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. In England, in London, in England, I'm afraid to cross any street. I'm always looking in the wrong direction. No, Gita Malachi is that you can't step on a certain part of the mountain, and we can take precautions. That's so. Mitzvah Ayin Chet, 78. From Mitzvah Ayin Chet. Okay. Chazorashu, who's our call Tommy, when he calls the Machan Levia, Levia, our Shekhavol Zorot. The halacha before we were talking about a Tommy going into the camp of the Shekhinah. There are also those who are not permitted to go into Machane Leviah, the Machane Leviah, the camp of the Levium, and most probably a good part of the Temple Mount around where the temple in fact stood, has the halacha, the Rambam is going to say that has the halacha of the camp of the Levites. Now the camp of the Levites, you know who's not permitted to go in there? Nida, Zavah, a man who had a seminal condition, Thomas Kelly, man or woman who had marital relationships, they're not permitted into the camp of the Levim, which is the real problem of Har Habayit. Except that there's a solution for that problem. Mikveh is the solution. So the number 78 is the Azhara Shehuzhar Kol Tomei, anybody's Tomei, from entering Machna Levia and Kamohu Zorot. Here the Rambam says, what is its counterpart for all generations? Machna Levia, the camp of the Levites, is what was in the desert. What is its counterpart? What is equal to it for all time? Har Habayit, the Temple Mount, has the halacha of the camp of the Levites. Everything that is around where the Beit HaMikdash stood. Kamosha Begayu, Predation of Masechet Kelim. The Rambam says, I explained it at the beginning of Masechet Kelim. We're going to see it in the Rambam's halachas in the Yad HaChazaka. The Shomlid Ba'er, and there I explain Isuk, Nisarfat Mei, Laharabai, the prohibition of those who are coming from entering Har Habayit. Okay, that's all we have to know. So there's a prohibition for a Tomei entering Machane Shechinah, the camp of the Divine Presence, which is the place where the Beit HaMikdash was. There is a prohibition on a Tomei entering the camp of the Levites, which is all the rest of Har Habayit. And by the way, it's a big place, Harabai. It's a big place, Harabai. If you hear on Friday that 100,000 Muslims came to pray over there, there's place for a lot more than that. And of course, the terrible thing is we don't even know what's going on beneath the surface. I was able to see a place where they dug out, and we have no idea. There must be more. By the way, they know how to dig beneath ground. They've had a lot of experience at Rafiach, you know, between Egypt. They know how to do it. They dug out all sorts of stuff and what they find. And I don't understand why there is no national pride in saying you can't do that. They are destroying any indication that Jews were ever there. By the tens of thousands of truckloads, it's unbelievable. And we remain silent. Now, just do me a favor. Don't go running out of this year to demonstrate.
Why not?
Because we'll give you another 3 weeks of information, and when you're really all riled up, you'll just listen to me. I give the orders around here. Okay. On the left-hand column, Mitzvah Lamed Aleph, 1. Mitzvah 31. This is a positive commandment. There's a positive commandment not to permit. We have to make sure to remove anybody who is spiritually unclean. We're supposed to remove him from the temple mount. And that's what it says in Torah. The Yishalchum and Armachim, you're supposed to send out of the camp called Tzoruah, the Cholzov, the Choltomi, the Nefesh, a person has Tzoras, one who has an unusual flow, either of blood or semen, the Choltomi, the Nefesh, Umachna Zeh Ha'omor, Kanhu Machane Shechina. Where is there the halacha to remove anybody who's unclean? A person who has entered or wants to enter the Machane Shechina, the camp of the Divine Presence, which the Rambam earlier explained, and he says it again now, that for all generations, that's the Azara, not the Temple Mount, but the area on the Temple Mount that was the Beit HaMikdash. And I have not placed here one other mitzvah, which really is the major mitzvah of Parashat Truma Tetzaveh Kitisa Vayakel Pekudei, and that is the mitzvah of Binyan Beit HaMikdash, building the Beit HaMikdash. There is another halacha that I didn't put here, but we're going to see it in the Rambam, and that is very significant. That's going to be very important. There is a, it says in Torah, Es Shabtotai Tishmoru, keep my Shabbos, Vet Mikdashi Tirou, have reverence and fear for my holy place. And there are going to be all sorts of halachas that you can't enter the Temple Mount the way you would enter any other place. We're going to see the halacha says that a person can't come up with shoes. You don't go up with leather shoes onto the Har HaBayit. Anybody who's going to go up the Har HaBayit has to put on his Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur shoes. One is not permitted to go with a pouch. Which you hold money, you don't go with that onto the Temple Mount. You don't use the Temple Mount as a shortcut from one place to another. If there's a particular, you're supposed to come up to the Temple Mount from the right and then go all the way around and leave from the left. That means you come up by the south and you go out by the north. The only one who comes in from the left is a person who is in mourning. And you know why the halacha is like that? Because when they see a person walking the other way, everybody who's coming toward him is going to ask him, oh, they will understand already that he is going the opposite way because he's in mourning, and they're going to say to him, Amok and Minachem Olcha, B'tov Shara V'Yitzim Yerushalayim. There's another halacha, Moram Mikdash. If you see it, this is where the halacha really is. You walk out of the Temple Mount walking backwards. Backwards. You never, on the Temple Mount, you don't turn your back to the Makom HaMikdash. Alright, so there are a lot of halachas. Now let's go to the sanctification halacha. And here is where the halachic discussion of the last 1,000 years begins. The Rambam. We're going to learn the first 3 halachos here in the Rambam, and some of them we've learned in the past in completely different connections, but now we're talking about the real thing. The Rambam had said there is a halachic form by which we can add to the city of Yerushalayim and to the Temple Mount and to the Beit HaMikdash. It means the following. There are halachas with regard to the city of Yerushalayim. Bein HaChomot, the Yerushalayim that is surrounded by the wall. For example, Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb, can only be eaten within the confines of the walled city. What happens if we want to extend the walled city or the sanctity of the walled city beyond the walls? So there's a whole formula by which it is done. Sacrifices that are to be brought, things that are to be said by the Sanhedrin. You need a prophet to agree. You need the Urim, the Tumim, the breastplate of the Kohen. Oh, there's a whole ceremony, something that we cannot do. Because it also requires a king, it requires a prophet, it requires the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. The Rambam says, "Kol Makom Shalom Nasa, Bechol Elu, Bechaseh Razeh," wherever it was not done, in this order, Ein Kadosh Gomor does not really become holy. It's not really an extension. The Seshah also Ezra, in Sefer Ezra, there are psukim to indicate that he went through a process of this sort. He brought Shnei Todot, two thanksgiving sacrifices. So the Rambam says that was not really a legal extension of the city of the Beit HaMikdash. It was something Zikaron Husha'asa. Since they were returning to the Beit HaMikdash and to Yerushalayim and to the Temple Mount, so he did something which was a commemoration of what might have been a real act of sanctifying the mountain. Because he says, Lo b'ma'asav nit kadesh ha-makom. It was not through what Ezra did that the mountain was made holy. Shelo ha-yashem lo melech lo un v'tumim. There was no king and there was no breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. U'bamen nit kadesha. How was Yerushalayim made holy? How was the Beit HaMikdash made holy? Famous Rambam. B'kedushah rishonah shekidushah shlomo. The first sanctity, the first sanctification of Yerushalayim and the Temple Mount and the Beit HaMikdash that was done by Shlomo HaMelech, Shehu Kidesh HaAzara v'Yerushalayim, he sanctified the Azara. We know already is the courtyard of the Temple itself, including the whole Temple. He sanctified the Azara and Yerushalayim, Lishatam, for that time, the Kishan Latid Lavo, and he sanctified it for all time. Today, according to the Rambam, Yerushalayim, Ha-Habayit, the Azara, is absolutely holy al Bidin Torah, because it was made holy by Shlomo HaMelech. We're talking about real biblical holiness. And Rambam now understands that he has to explain something. With regard to the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam elsewhere had passed in that the first sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, which was done by Yehoshua ben Nun, became null and void when the country was conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, by the forces of Babylon. So the Rambam has to explain if, with regard to the land, Eretz Yisrael itself, the first sanctity became null and void, why do I say that with regard to the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, the first sanctity of Shlomo HaMelech remains in force until today? So the Rambam is going to make his great differentiation. He says, the first sanctity of the land by Yehoshua was done through conquest. Along comes Nebuchadnezzar, 850 years later, the Babylonian forces overrun the country and they conquer it and capture it. The conquest of Nebuchadnezzar cancels the conquest of Yehoshua. And since the sanctity of the land was because of Yehoshua's conquest, nothing remains of Yehoshua's conquest now because Babylon has conquered it. But the sanctity of the Beit HaMikdash by Shlomo HaMelech was not because of conquest. The sanctity of the Beit HaMikdash was because the divine presence came down to rest upon the mountain and upon the Beit HaMikdash. Ushchinah Einah V'Teilah, the divine presence is never removed. There's no such thing as somebody or some force coming and removing divine presence. And therefore, from the moment that Shlomo HaMelech, 3,000 years ago, sanctified the temple, the mountain, and Yerushalayim, it is holy until today. And the Rambam also brings the Gemara, the Mishnah that says, that afilu b'churbanon, even after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed and it is desolate, it still remains holy. According to the Rambam, the sanctity of the Temple Mount and the place of the Beit HaMikdash is in force, it is real today as it always was. Which means that we have to contend with real halachas. real problems. We know, we've already learned, that one who is Tomei is not permitted up onto that Temple Mount. Now we have something to talk about. Interestingly enough, the great antagonist of the Rambam was the Raven. Avraham Avbedin, who disagrees with the Rambam, and usually, he spares no words with the Rambam. When he disagrees with the Rambam, he disagrees. And he makes his dissatisfaction with the words of the Rambam quite evident. And here, the writer says, famous writer says, what are you talking about? There is no sanctity in the Temple Mount, no sanctity to Yerushalayim, just like the sanctity of the land came to an end with the conquest of Nebuchadnezzar, so too the sanctity of the Temple Mount, the area of the Temple, Yerushalayim, all gone, all over. No sanctity to Eretz Yisrael, and it will not be sanctified. But by the way, when we talk about no sanctity, we're talking about sanctity with regard to mitzvah. The innate, inherent sanctity of Eretz Yisrael from the time of creation remains for all time. The fact that this is Eretz HaKodesh, the Holy Land, and that divine presence can rest over here and nowhere else, that remains for all time. But there is a separate form of sanctity of the land that makes it obligated in Truma and Meiser and Shemitah and all of these other halachas. The Rambam says it doesn't apply at all. By the way, according to the Rava, that means there's no Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael. You understand? And if anything, and according to the Rava, you wouldn't have to have anything Noki Michash Shvius. He wouldn't even need a Heta Mechira. So here's the titans, the two giants, the Rambam and the Rambam, and makes a big, big difference. So I can just take you straight down through the generations and make it absolutely clear. And even in the last century, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim in Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim says clearly that the conclusion of the overwhelming number of the earlier and the latter poskim is like the Rambam and not like the Raven, and therefore we don't take the Raven's opinion into consideration at all. It means we're dealing with the Temple Mount and Yerushalayim and the place of the Temple itself that is absolutely holy. There is Kedusha. Therefore we have to deal with the halachas of who may go up onto the mountain and who may not go up onto the mountain. There are also going to be other things that are going to be interesting. The fact that this is where we may get down to it all. You know, I just let you in on where we may end up in a second or a third shiur, whenever it'll come. There were times in the early period of the Muslim conquest of Eretz Yisrael, the early caliphs permitted the construction of a Beit Knesset on the Temple Mount. And for about 400 years, there was a shul on the Temple Mount. The Rambam visited Eretz Yisrael for 18 months, and he describes in a letter, an autobiographical letter, he describes arriving at Akko, the port of Akko, and when he left, precisely the day that he left Akko to come to Yerushalayim, and that he was zeicher there to be mispalel, to pray before the temple itself. And from the words that he writes, it seems quite clear that he was up on the temple, mount. Even in our day recently, it was no less a figure than Mark Eliyahu, who said that if we could get the permission to build a Beit Knesset placed on the Temple Mount somewhere that will obviate all of the halachic problems, there's no reason why everybody shouldn't be able to go there. I'm not going to go into it now, but there are slightly more difficult problems with regard to women going up the mountain than to men, and it has nothing to do with us being down on feminism. There are certain areas of halacha, but certainly if a uh, if there's a Bet Knesset that is built at certain places on the mountain, anybody can go up. Anybody can go up. Fact is, there are parts of the mountain that are not really, that were not always part of the mountain. Because the mountain at its present size is not the mountain of Shlomo HaMelech. Because there was a mad king by the name of Herod who added to the Temple Mount. It's possible to walk around the mountain. Remember, it's possible. I'm not passing it yet. Give me a few weeks. Just give me a few weeks. All right? It's possible even to walk around the mountain and not even have walked on Har HaBayit, but have walked on areas that were added to the Har HaBayit by King Herod. All right. Let's go. So I gave you, the fact is that I just now told you Halacha Tet Vav and Tet Zayin, those two halachot of the Rambam, where the Rambam differentiates between the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael and the sanctity of the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount in Yerushalayim was sanctified because of the divine presence, the Shekhinah, Ushkina Eino Betela. You can never remove the divine presence. Therefore, from the time that Shlomo HaMelech sanctified the Temple Mount and Yerushalayim, it is holy until today. We're living in a holy city, you understand? We're living in a holy city. It's a very big schus. Yes?
This is why, in fact, the site of the Beis HaMikdash was purchased, and it wasn't obtained as at the time of Yerushalayim.
I like that. The fact is that David HaMelech, King David, could have conquered the Temple Mount, but he didn't. He purchased it, fair and square. And precisely, as has been said in the past, precisely those places where we purchase fair and square are the ones that the world wants to deny us. And it's a great deal, it's our problem. The Marat HaMachpelah, we have Kevin Yosef. I'd like to understand why you have to be a breast of a chosid to want to go to Kevin Yosef. Why doesn't Kevin Yosef is not ours? Of course it's ours. And that area was bought by Yaakov. And of course the Temple Mount that was bought by, purchased by David. So he's saying that it was purchased because then there can be...
No question.
There can be no question. Right. There can be no questions with regard to any other people that purchase something. But with regard to us, everything is a question. Ah, we're such a unique, unusual people, you understand? I'm considering putting up a wall on my mirpeset, and I'm afraid that they're going to indict me in the Hague, you understand?
Right.
What are you talking about? I'm a shugi of health. They're deciding there whether we can defend ourselves, and it's unbelievable. Anyway, we're going to do another few halachot. Now, next week, anyway, is scheduled Purim. But we have a lot of parashot the next few months where we will deal stage by stage with the question of Har HaBayit until we will ultimately arrive at certain conclusions. Mitzvah Aseh, Halacha Aleph. Mitzvah Aseh Liyir'o Min HaMikdash. It's a mitzvah, positive mitzvah, to have reverence and fear for the holy place. Shemena, it says, U'mikdashi tiro'u, fear my mikdash. V'lo min ha-mikdash ha-toyarei, the Rambam says, it's not from the place itself, el misha tzifa ha-mikdashi. You know who we are? It's the revelation of the divine presence that we are frightened of. By the way, the halacha of mikdashi tiro'u, to fear and have reverence. By the way, this, as I said earlier, this mitzvah of mikdashi tiro'u is that which governs, if we finally find a way to go up onto the Temple Mount, mikdashi tiro'u, the fear and reverence, it is what governs our conduct on the Temple Mount. This mitzvah is brought in the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Chafetz Chaim, but he immediately says, that all of our batei knesiot and batei medrashot have, as far as this mitzvah is concerned, they have the halacha of mikdoshi tiro, fear my holy place. And it's interesting, the Chavetz Chaim was probably the one who did more single-handedly to open up the whole area of temple and sacrifice as something that should be studied by all Jews, and certainly Talmid Chacham. There were areas that were not dealt with for so many years. He reinstituted the idea of learning all of the Talmudic parts of Kachin that deal with the sacrifices, because he believed with perfect faith, Yenehedo Yibane HaMikdash, Beis HaMikdash is going to be built, and we have to be ready for it. We have to be ready. And even he could, maybe he didn't imagine that this mitzvah of Mikdashi Tiro'u in 50 years, in less than 50 years, he died in 33, in 67, Mikdashi Tiro'u was already a halacha that we had to be concerned about, not merely for a shul or a bet medrash or a yeshiva, but for the Temple Mount itself, precisely where it was originally. It was originally said. So, for those who hold you can't go up to the mountain, so the Mikdashi Tiro is that, not going up to the mountain. Those who hold you can go up to the mountain, given certain preparation, so then the Mikdashi Tiro is even fulfilled upon the mountain itself. Ve'ezo hi yirato, what's called fear of the Temple Mount? Man doesn't go in with a staff, a stick. Now, what it really means, if somebody needs it in order to walk, that's permitted. But you know, I imagine, you know, all these old movies with English colonels, you understand, who have their, whatever you call it, that stick on it. A walker, or what?
Swagger.
You know what I'm talking about. I can't hear it. Swagger stick, yes. Because that's something, on the Temple Mount, one has to demonstrate a sense of humility. We are humble before God. You don't come schlepping around with a swagger stick. By its very name, it's something, of course, that speaks of great guy. Opening all Shabbat Adlov, you can't go on to the Temple Mount with a shoe. Opa apundato. Apundato is the pouch. We talked about a pouch where you keep your papers, your credit cards, and your money. The Bet HaMikdash is not a place for money changers, you understand. I don't know what Mel Gibson did about that, but I'm sure it looks pretty ugly there. Oba avak shal raglov, or with dust upon one's feet. Obi moyus surinilo besardino, or, you know, they used to have long robes, money hanging like a money, either a money belt or a money, something holding money that's around one's neck, a pouch. Then sorech lom shal sul marok b'chol harabayit, certainly you're not permitted to expectorate to spit any place harabayit. Ellen is done well if a person has to mouth lead open big developments in a handkerchief or a tissue, but has to show to expectorate on the temple, you can't do that. So Yasa Harabai Derech, she connects me pair, he connects me pet and so say that pet as she connector, Kidel Katsera Derech. You're not permitted to use the Temple Mount as a shortcut, come in on one side and go out on the other side. And meanwhile, what you've been able to do is, instead of walking all around the temple walls, you know what you did? All around the walls of the old city. You know, it's a pretty easy one. You go up onto the Temple Mount and just cross over to the other end, and there you are, down at the other side of the... You're not permitted to do that. Eliakifon Bachutz. You have to go around it from the outside. Below Yikonislo El Dvar Mitzvah. You're only permitted to go to the Temple Mount for Dvar Mitzvah. In other words, it really means, therefore, that just to go up as a tourist, no, but you have to be able to pray, to say a Kapitul Tehillim. You have to say a Kapitul Tehillim, go up to the Temple Mount. We're also going to see that in the course of our study that a lot of mitzvahs that we fulfill are infinitely more powerful and more effective when done on the Temple Mount. Number one, of course, is prayer itself. Prayer itself, the song is written. Prayer itself. You understand? If people come to the Kotel, you understand, to pour out that, people come with foot slots to the Kotel in order to pray for a chayla. Can you imagine the power of praying for a chayla up on the Temple Mount itself? There are a lot of mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog. Lulav and Esrog is supposed to be lifnei Hashem, before God. The mitzvah of Aliyah Regel, going up to, it's really going up to the Beit HaMikdash, going up to the Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash. What was Aliyah Regel? Re'iyat Pnei Hashem, to be seen before God. And that's on the Temple Mount. In other words, would it be permitted to do so? Wouldn't it? Then we would have to make sure each one of the Shalom Shigol that we go there. By the way, we have so many documents from Tanoim and Rishonim and Achronim that say for hundreds of years after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, Jews would come from Babylon, from Egypt, from all the southern lands. They would come for Yom Tov. They would come to Yerushalayim and go up to the Temple Mount. We have evidence from the Meiri. One of the Rishonim says that Shamati, I heard that people go up and daven on the Temple Mount. But remember, I'm not yet expressing an approach. We want to look at this in a very cold, calculating manner, as cold as I can be about it. All right. This is how I told you, all those who enter the Temple Mount, they go to the right, and they go all the way around, and they go out there small to the left, except for the person that something happened to him. This is the euphemism for a person who's had a loss in the family. He goes around the Temple Mount to the left. Therefore, they would ask him, why are you going around the Temple Mount to the left? Shani Oveil, he would answer, because I'm in love. And the response is, the one who dwells in this house should console you. But you know? All of a sudden, it just strikes me. Maybe that's the pshat. Hamakom yinachem alecha. The place, the Temple Mount, the one who dwells there should console you. For all I know, maybe that's been the pshat all along, but it just struck me right now. Shanim in Udeh. A person who's been excommunicated also has a halacha of an avail, and he therefore walks to the left. So if his response is not that I'm a mourner, but his response is I am one who has been excommunicated, so the response is Hashochem v'abayit hazeh yitain b'levavcha v'tishmar l'divrei chavirecha v'yakarvucha. So beautiful. Why was a person excommunicated? A person who rejected the words of Beit Din. Zakin Mamre doesn't live long enough to be able to walk to the Temple Mount and put it to death. But somebody who refuses to listen to something that he's been told to do by Beit Din, so they give him a number of chances to do it, he doesn't do it. Beit Din has a right to excommunicate him. Excommunicated means he can't be counted to a minion. People don't talk to him. So the person says, "Shani menudeh." So you tell him the Rosh should give you the seichel that you should do that which Chachmei Yisrael, the wise men of Israel, want from you, and therefore they will bring you back into the fold. I knew at the outset that I'm starting something that's going to take time. So I just want to tell you that what we're going to have to consider while we're going through all of this is, it may very well be that after all of the years of saying, the ghoulish lady should come. We're not emotionally ready for it. We don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to handle it. Because it's going to require a deepening and an intensification of our personal religiosity. And we're not ready for it yet. Which means that maybe one of the reasons why I'm learning this is that we have to begin to get ourselves ready. We have to understand that there are changes taking place in the world at large and more than anything else within the Jewish world. We're just not ready to handle it. We're not ready. We don't know or have the emotional makeup until we force ourselves to come face to face with the fact that we are living in a new reality. To be continued. Next week is we'll talk about Purim. I provide.